Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me for the next hour, we'll try and keep it to an hour, is my usual partner, Jeff Rimbo. Jeff, welcome. We're going to chat more about the draft and really dig into all of it now as all seven rounds are in the books. But it's always a fascinating time. I guess fans always look at it as the time for hope and for building their teams. So it's an exciting part of the offseason, isn't it?
It is. And right now, the coaches and all of the people that are involved in putting the team on the field, the trainers, the strength coaches, all of those guys, they're excited because these kids will be in most of the facilities this coming weekend. Because they're all college students here, most of them are still in college, they're not allowed to come in during the week. But on this weekend, they'll have the first chance to get these guys on the field and take a look at the talent that they were able to acquire during the draft.
And we are going to talk about that, Jeff, because I want to find out from a coach's point of view how you integrate these rookies into your team, whether it's just X's and O's or whether they're sort of laid down team rules and how to act, all of that kind of stuff. We'll get into that a bit later today. We're not going to look at every pick for every team. We're not even going to be able to assess every team because time constraints won't allow us to do all 32 teams the kind of justice that we would like to do on Inside the Huddle. So we know you can find that information elsewhere. So we're going to look at talking points, Jeff, winners and losers from this draft. Some of the headlines that caught our eye. And I wanted to ask you this question to start, because I'm thinking of people like, I don't know, Zach Mettenberger at the Tennessee Titans, or let's take Andrew Whitworth of the Cincinnati Bengals. He wants a new contract with the Bengals. He dared the team to draft an offensive tackle. They went and took two of them with their first two picks. I think highlighting the business side of the NFL as usual. But, you've sat in the locker room with players, I guess, when drafts are going on. How do veteran players react when they see young players drafted at their positions?
Well, it depends on how high they're drafted. If a guy goes in the first three, then you got to get a little bit concerned because they're going to invest so much money in him that they're going to give him an opportunity to make the football team. They're going to give him every opportunity. And it's an indication, of how they feel about you. I know that it was amazing when we're in NFL Europe, Neil, and we're sitting in our hotel room in Amsterdam or Dusseldorf or wherever we were. You know, it was a different day and time that you didn't have access to the internet as you do now. So USA Today was the first that these guys would get in the morning, the newspaper, about how the draft went. And it was incredible because they would, it'd be like you'd see guys just their entire continents change when they'd read the paper, and it was like, oh no, they took a guy at my position. Because there are only so many jobs to go around, and when they invest one, two, or three pick in a guy, they're going to put a lot of money in that guy, and a lot of work has been done on that guy, and they project that guy to be a contributor on the football team. And if he's at your position, you got to feel a little uncomfortable. Not a little uncomfortable, you got to get really uncomfortable. And, Zach Mettenberger is not going to go down without a fight, but he's going to eventually go down because, the talent is going to trump, the guy that's there, the incumbent, and that's just the way it works, and that's what makes guys uncomfortable right now going into these mini camps and in these OTAs when these young guys come to campus this weekend.
We already saw Zach Stacy traded from the Rams to the Jets. We've seen James Jones be let go, the veteran wide receiver from the Oakland Raiders. I mean, there are tangible, you can see it. You can see the effects, Jeff, already. And I wanted to ask you just that thing with the Bengals and Whitworth. I mean, that does sum up this is a business, isn't it? I know you say it all the time, but, your star offensive lineman, probably when you look around the league at the moment, people would have Andrew Whitworth as one of the top two or three left tackles in the game. So, the Bengals might have felt some pressure to sign him to a new contract. What do they do? They get some leverage themselves. They go out and say, well, you've got to compete against these two guys.
Yeah, it's funny, though. Whitworth's not, you think he's concerned about Obugwe, who has a bad knee?
No.
That's the thing that when you look at that draft, and while we're talking about the draft, looking at Cincinnati strategically, you got a guy who's coming off of ACL surgery, athletic, but in some in some circles, not particularly highly rated in the tackle class. You take him knowing that he's not going to contribute this year because Whitworth, he's not going to beat Whitworth out. That's just the reality of it. And then you're basically taking a first-round pick to replace an offensive tackle who's still playing at a very, very high level. It was a head-scratcher for me, Neil. I really didn't understand what Cincinnati's needs, why they would, you know, make that selection. But, you know, again, that's what makes the draft so much fun. You know, you talk about the drama of draft day. That's the, you know, when you see those kinds of picks, you just go, wow.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, I was going to ask you about that a little bit further into the podcast, but we could talk about that now as it kind of translates and moves into that subject about teams that, you know, we often see, do they draft for need or do they take best player available? And I think what we saw over the weekend was, you know, two schools of thought, really. But there were teams definitely who didn't take for need. I mean, the New York Jets did not need another 3-4 defensive end, yet they take Leonard Williams. You know, you could argue the Carolina Panthers didn't need another linebacker. They took Shaq Thompson. The Colts, with a wide receiver, they take Philip Dorsett in the first round. And there was a quote from Jim Irsay, the owner of the team, who said, "We let the board talk to us." In other words, they felt Dorsett was the best player on the board at that time, and they had to take him.
Yeah, you know, each of those was individually either, in my opinion, justifiable or really risky. And let's start with Shaq Thompson. Mm-hmm. All right, now, obviously, he's a football player. There's no question about that. He, you know, he scores 7 touchdowns as a senior, you know, 3 on offense, 4 on defense. He started at running back and had a 150-yard game. He's been an impact linebacker. But with the needs that Carolina had, and a guy who was graded by everybody that I talked to at best a second-round grade, why you would stretch up and take him, that one was really, really curious to me. And I think when you look at these guys, this is how this draft will be evaluated. Obviously, it's kind of almost, I won't say silly, but it's tough to really put a grade on a draft right now. You got to see these guys in a year, in a second year, and really it's the third year before you really know. But will Shaq Thompson end up being Davis's replacement and make the impact in the next 3 years that Dave Gettleman's betting he will, or will some of those guys that were drafted after him, who were rated higher than him, have a bigger impact? And then you look at this draft and go, man, what was Gettleman thinking?
And I think Gettleman's going to have some eyes on him in terms of his second round pick as well. They took Devin Funchess, well, we don't know if he's going to be a wide receiver or a tight end yet from Michigan. He was a tight end who moved across to receiver. If he plays receiver, they've got a couple of, giant redwood trees on the outside with Kelvin Benjamin and Funchess. But, you know, he gave up draft picks there again to move up to get that player. Gave up a third-round pick and a sixth-round pick to the Rams. That's expensive.
It is expensive, and it's really, you know, you're basically shopping for the same kind of guy that you had, you know, on the other side, you know, because Kelvin Benjamin's, as you mentioned, big, strong, physical, not over-the-top speed wide receiver with great catching range. Well, Funchess was a tight end at Michigan early in his career. Then he comes to his senior year, they put him out at wideout, and he looks like, playing against Big Ten corners, he looks just like that. Is he a split out tight end? Is he an H? Is he, you know, what is he? Again, there just were too many receivers in this class, in my opinion, that they had access to that would much better fit, you know, what they need, which is vertical stretch in their passing offense, to take a guy who, what is he? Is he a wideout? Is he a tight end? Is he a move tight end? You know, is he just a little faster Greg Olsen? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the question that I think Gettleman's going to have to answer and will only be answered in these next couple of years.
I know we touched on the first round on Friday's podcast, Jeff, but the audio wasn't great. We just tried to get something out for people to listen to, so I probably asked you this question on Friday, but it's worth repeating now. Do you think the value of Leonard Williams was just too much for the Jets to pass up there?
No question. I mean, it's interesting because people will flip and flop on things, but let's just go with the facts. Leonard Williams was one of the top rated and by many people the best, the highest rated player in the draft, not just defensive player, but player in the draft. And so when you get in a situation, even though they've got great defensive line players right now with the Jets, you get in a position where you have that much value still on the board, it's really, really difficult to not go best player available, because particularly in today's National Football League where you can't get enough pass rushers, and in Todd Bowles' scheme, it's now possible to have all three of those guys on the field, and that's going to really help them.
Yeah, and I think when, you know, that pick we talked about with Philip Dorsett as well, with the Indianapolis Colts, you can see there's some logic there in that it's surrounding Andrew Luck with receiving talent, and that this is still probably going to be a passing team, even though they added Frank Gore. I actually like that pick. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I do too, and I think that the kid will be another weapon. You know, you look at their receiving core, you compare him to T.Y. Hilton, I guess, and, you know, in terms of stature and physical ability, and, you know, they get into so many three and four wide receiver sets that to have his ability on the field, his ability to stretch the field, he's got big time track speed, and he's a good football player. He's not just a track guy. So, you know, you've got crossing routes being run by one of the speed guys and vertical routes by the other speed guy. That gives Andrew Luck an awful lot of weapons, and this is a game of matchups. So now you've put yourself in a position where you've created another very, very difficult matchup for the defensive coordinators who have to defend you. You got T.Y. Hilton, you got Dorsett now, you got Colby Fleener, you got Frank Gore. I mean, it's now they have got some weapons in Indianapolis.
The process was obviously good to a lot of players over the weekend, those taken in the first, second, third rounds. We can talk about the winners and losers of the draft in a couple of minutes. But the process was not so good, Jeff, for Lyle Collins, the offensive tackle from LSU. I guess British running back Jay Ajayi, who was, I think, was expecting to be second or third round. You know, some people had him as high as the third best running back in this draft. He was the 14th running back taken over the weekend, ends up going to the Miami Dolphins and will be back here playing at Wembley Stadium in October. And Randy Gregory dropped all the way to number 60 overall. So for different reasons, this process was not so good and really a unique situation with Lyle Collins, because obviously he's been helping the police with their inquiries about the murder of Brittany Mills, a former girlfriend of his back in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And it looks like the teams have just decided to stay well clear, Jeff, until they know a bit more detail on this.
Well, some of them have decided to stay well clear. You know, Rex has already been down to Baton Rouge. He's been down there talking to the kid and trying to get a feel for what's going on. That was really, fans need to understand this. When they establish a draft grade on a player, there are a number of factors that go into it. First of all is his film, his production as a college player, how he projects to the NFL from a football standpoint, how he does it at the combine, how he does it at his interviews, his character history, his injury history. All of those things factor in to give a guy a grade. And in each of the cases of the guys that fell, there were red flags in their overall grade, and that caused them to drop. And in Lyle Collins' case, you know, the NFL right now is so, and those owners are so sensitive after the Hernandez situation and the Ray Rice situation, they're so sensitive about the character issues. No owner wants to be, or GM wants to be, a guy that goes up on the podium and announces that they've taken Lyle Collins with the whatever pick of the draft, and then here comes the media. How can you take a guy who's, you know, being questioned about a murder involving his girlfriend and his unborn child, and, you know, it just not as good a player as Lyle Collins is, they're just not going to put themselves in that situation until they feel better about what his role actually was or was not in that incident.
He met with the Bills, like you said, with Rex Ryan on Monday. He meets with the Miami Dolphins today on Tuesday. Now, Jeff, this could be, I know people download this podcast all through the week, so this could be dated by the time people are listening to it, but there's been talk of Collins signing as a free agent. There's been talk of him saying, okay, I'm just not going to sign for anyone. I'm going to re-enter the NFL draft in 2016. First of all, there, just on that, Jeff, I mean, I think there will still be teams that, once they can get some clarity on this situation, want him to play this year. How would you feel if you were an NFL coach looking at drafting this guy next year, if you know that, because he won't go back to school, so that he's been out of football for a year? Would that be a concern?
Yeah, it would be, and I think it would hurt his draft stock. And I think, you know, this thing, you know, the NFL can take some criticism, in my opinion, justifiably, on how they handled this, because when he was told he had to go down to Louisiana to see the authorities, he was in Chicago. He left the draft site. His agent immediately petitioned to get him into the supplemental draft,
yeah,
which is that kind of draft in the spring for guys that, for whatever reason, are available. The NFL said, no, we're not going to allow you into the supplemental draft. And that set off a chain reaction then, because now none of the teams took him. And when he goes into the free agent pool, and this is really important for people to understand, how much money he lost. Because here's a kid that, say, at the worst was going to be a second-round pick. Yeah. All of that bonus money, because the way the NFL's this cap is structured now, your unrestricted free agents, your streak free agents, the guys that are signing right now to go to minicamp, which is what he will be a part of, you only have a very small pool of money for bonuses for those guys.
Yeah, Jeff, they're not going to pay him. They're not going to say, well, you would have been a first-round talent, Lyle, so here's first-round money. This is, again, it's the business side of it. If they can get him cheap, they're going to get him cheap, aren't they?
Well, it's not whether they want to. They can't.
Right.
The way the rules are structured, there's nothing they can do, because you talk to the GMs and you hear them talking, and Whaley said there's nothing they can do. They are only allowed a pool of money for bonuses for free agents that, yeah, you sign after the draft. Well, even if he eats up that entire pool, which they'll never do that, but even if he ate up that entire pool, he still would stand to lose millions of dollars compared to what he would have made had he gone in the supplemental draft or in the regular draft. So I would not be surprised if there's not litigation in this regard, either by the Players Association or by Collins and his attorney himself at the NFL for lost wages, because of if he's exonerated in that case in Louisiana.
Yeah, and we've got to wait and see what the details of the case bring as well. There seems to be some not complete clarity there either. So Lyle Collins is playing a waiting game at the moment. He does meet with the Miami Dolphins today as we record this podcast. Jay Ajayi is a member of the Miami Dolphins, Jeff. As I said, fifth-round draft pick. Adam Schefter reported that he's got major problems with his right knee and that we're looking at a bone-on-bone situation there with his cartilage. They were talking about potential one-contract player. I know from spending time with Jay last week, you know, it's interesting that all this has come out. He was frustrated that reports came out that he went back up to Indianapolis for a medical recheck, because he said that flat out didn't happen. He knows where he's been and where he's been traveling, and that wasn't the case. So I guess there was obvious concerns there for so many teams to pass on him, and now he's got to do that thing that, you know, so many players have tried to do over the years, and that's prove all the people wrong, as he was quoted as saying.
But yeah, you know what? And what happens, Neil, is you get into these last days before the draft, and it's like a feeding frenzy. Any little bit of news that's a negative about a player immediately gets legs, and all the other 32 teams, well, what do they know that we don't know?
Right.
And that's what causes these kids to drop. Like his knee, I am absolutely convinced that the Dolphins have done their due diligence on his knee. And, you know, once they start to fall, then everybody in all those draft rooms gets nervous, because they're thinking, well, you know, let's say that the Cardinals are two picks in front of you, and they pass on a guy that you have rated high. Then you start telling yourself a story. Then you start going, well, the Cardinals must know something we don't know. And these kids will begin to descend. It happens. You know, look at Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it's happened historically in every draft. Unfortunately for Jay, he was the guy this draft. Now, if his knee is sound and he's ready to go, I think he's going to be a very, very good pro. He's a big, strong back. He catches the ball well. He's got great vision and balance. The thing that I gave him a knock for was I see him drop the ball too much. He lays the ball on the ground, fumbles too much. But, that's what coaching's for. Tiki Barber went through that transition in his career. I think the kid's a good player. Again, the issue is going to be, how sound is that knee? And, on one hand, you got Todd Gurley coming off of an ACL, and he's drafted in the first round, but you got Jay falling to the fifth because of his knee, because of the difference in the knee problem. The concern that I was told yesterday about a Jay was that there's arthritis in that knee, and it's a cartilage problem, not an ACL problem. ACL repairs now are pretty slick. Cartilage is a whole nother issue, and again, we'll just have to see. And I'm hopeful for Jay that he's able to have a long and prosperous NFL career.
And that question came up in the mailbag, Jeff. Jack Demon said, if teams are thinking about drafting Pro Bowl prospects such as Todd Gurley, are medicals overlooked compared to mid-round picks such as Jay Ajayi? I would say no. They always do their homework, but like you said, they're different injuries, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I think that actually the scrutiny gets higher the player is drafted.
Right.
If a player, man, that's why, again, you talk to NFL guys, talk to the scouts, which I do, and talk to the guys that rank their boards. Everybody initially, I'm talking pre-combine, they had the kid rated as high as a second rounder. And then he began to slide because of the issues with the knee and his fumbling, but was still projected even as late as 2 weeks ago to be in a late second, early third round guy.
Jeff, so, you're right. You can get a sense of how the teams are feeling. I had this horrible sort of sinking feeling watching the draft when Jay didn't get his name called in the second round. I actually wasn't surprised not to hear it called in the third or the fourth round. You just get that. You can start to see a pattern emerging, can't you? And you start to get an understanding of how the teams feel about these guys, whether it's right or wrong. You can sense it when you're following the draft.
Yeah, and again, because we live in such a media saturated, world, that all Jay Glazer or Spector or any of these guys have to do is just throw something out there, and they may be just throwing darts at the wall, and they get those stories get legs, and once those stories get legs, it's really difficult. It's unfortunate for the player, but it's just the nature of the business.
Randy Gregory falls to number 60 overall. He goes to the Dallas Cowboys. Rob Marinelli is now going to work with Randy Gregory and Greg Hardy. In terms of people that can get after the quarterback, great. But, Jeff, there's challenges there in terms of keeping those guys in check and, on message and on focus. But it seems like Randy Gregory was very, very honest with the Cowboys, talked about being bipolar and taking medication and wants to get himself right, and Dallas have almost been billed as this kind of place to reach out and help sort of talented but troubled players.
Well, every team has its philosophy on how they're going to deal with these kinds of guys. The thing that's interesting about Randy Gregory is, there's more and more to it as you go through it, right? Here's a guy who fails a drug test at the combine. Here's a guy who tells some teams he never smoked marijuana at Nebraska. Here's the guy that tells other teams he smoked marijuana at Nebraska regularly. He fails multiple drug tests in college. He doesn't show up for meetings with three teams during the combine. I mean, there were teams that took him flat off the board because he just erratic behavior.
Yeah.
Then stories start to come out. Right or wrong, I don't know. They're not, I've not substantiated the stories, but stories came out about the fact that he has got mental health issues. So, all of those things come into play when you talk about taking a guy. Now, with the Cowboys, they are willing to overlook some of these things, but that's why you have, the drama that's kind of seems to always circulate around the football team, because they take a number of these kinds of guys.
Let's look at the the mending of bridges department, Jeff, here. Philip Rivers says that he never wanted to be traded, all along. And I guess Tom Telesco, he stood by that. He was like, he was strong and he didn't want to trade Philip Rivers. And, they might have some contract issues to work out down the road. And they didn't trade him. And, Rick Spielman was the same way with Adrian Peterson. Peterson wanted out of Minnesota. I'm still struggling to get my head around why he's so disappointed that the Vikings were disappointed in him, considering everything that he did last year. But, that one remains to be played out. But Rick Spielman stood by his guns as well. First of all, on those two non-trades, that makes absolute sense for the Chargers and Vikings, right?
Absolutely, and I think in both cases what you see is clubs that recognize that they have an asset, and they have in both those players, in one certainly a Hall of Fame level asset, and the other, possible Hall of Fame level asset guy, and you're not going to let those guys go for less than what you deem is their trade value. And, the players sometimes, this is the difference between the NFL and, let's say, Premiership Soccer. Once you're under contract to these NFL teams, you just don't walk in and say, "Well, I want to go to FC Barcelona."
Right.
I mean, your contract is held by the club, and that's the way the system works. That's how they create the parity. That's one of the ways they create the parity that they do around the league. So every team has an opportunity. You don't get into that situation where one club can attract all the best players. And again, so when you look at the system puts the team in the driver's seat once the contract is signed. Once the player gets to free agency, then the player takes over and is in control as they negotiate that new contract. Then the team becomes in control again as they hold that player's contract. So even though Philip Rivers has 1 year left on his contract, the Chargers now have to make a decision about their future. Is it better to have him for one season more and then hopefully get a quarterback in the next draft or in a trade or free agency or whatever, and while we've got him, continue to work to extend his contract and get him for three or four more as he plays out his career? All of those things go on behind closed doors, and it's like I say, when LaDainian Tomlinson goes on NFL Network and says, "I think Philip Rivers is done in San Diego," well, that gives credence to those kinds of reports, which is kind of, that's just an opinion of LaDainian Tomlinson, but because he was a Charger and because they were teammates, all of a sudden he becomes an authority.
Yeah, Rivers.
When he really has no idea what's going on.
No, he's like the rest of us, Jeff. He's having a good guess. Rivers is under contract until 2015 season. Then he could be franchised for 2016. Jeff, Rivers and Adrian Peterson will be handsomely rewarded this coming season. They are stars of the league, so will they be motivated to play for the Chargers and Vikings, respectively?
I think so. I think Philip Rivers would be motivated to play for, the East Street, Pirates. If he had a game to play, he's just that kind of guy. And I think Adrian Peterson's the same way. Again, there'll be some hurt feelings, but a lot of this stuff, to be honest with you, Neil, is posturing that's done in the media by the clubs, by the agents, by the athletes, because they understand what it is. It's a business, and you only have a very short time to take care of your business. Once they get back in the locker room, once they're back with their teammates, then this kind of acrimony kind of just disappears, and they're back to being football players.
Chip Kelly kind of alluded to the fact that the media makes a lot of the speculation, seem bigger than it is, but if you're Chip Kelly now, Jeff, or if you're John Fox and you're talking to Sam Bradford and Jay Cutler, are you being honest and saying, "Look, you put me in a situation where you need to raise your game so you're not deemed to be on the trading block," or do you kind of just say, "Forget about that, that was a load of baloney"? I mean, have they got to build bridges with their quarterbacks, because both were reportedly dangled in trade offers?
Well, I think, you're constantly building bridges as a coach with your players. And the reality of the situation is, in both of their cases, had Jay Cutler played better in Chicago, then there wouldn't be any of this discussion about trading him. The guy has got a huge cap number, and they did dangle him out there in some trades to try and get to Mariota. But the reality of it is, teams would just looked at that cap number and said, for the player, not interested. So right now, the Bears have got to figure out a way to get him to play better. Whatever they need to do, he's got to play better because he is their quarterback number one, and he is taking such a big percentage of their cap.
Mm. We're going to look at some winners and losers then, Jeff. First of all, just on the opening round, which we had live on Sky Sports, not a lot of drama. We did talk about this on Friday, just two trades, but I think we talked about perhaps that there was, you know, a lot of the talent was even after the first few picks, and then beauty was in the eye of the beholder, so it wasn't always worth moving up to take somebody.
Yeah, to me, when I look at this first round, there are three consecutive picks that happened where I kind of went, all right?
Yeah.
First of all, 17, San Francisco takes Eric Armstead, right? Great physical ability, great talent, a guy that most people really felt was a late second, third round guy, right? And you know, you look at the talent that San Francisco has lost over the course of the season, you look at him and you go, boy, oh boy, that's a reach for that guy based on what he's done. You're drafting solely on potential.
Do you really want a project there? Or do you want to
Exactly. With the, you know, with a first-round pick, the 17th player in the draft, do you want a project there? Then the Chiefs go and take Marcus Peters, a cornerback from Washington, who arguably has first-round talent, but the guy has been kicked off of his college team, has had numerous run-ins with coaches, not just one coach, a coach. I'm talking about coaches. Mm. And, you know, do you want to take – I mean, that's one of those really, really risky ones, because if the kid quits on you, then, you know, you got a 18th pick of the draft, the 18th pick of the draft on a guy who's kicked off of his own college football team. All right. Now, you're in the senior year, you're in your senior year in college. These kids get it. They understand. They've already started to talk to people. They know what their value is, and they know that their senior year is critical for them. Why in the world would you get in enough of a brouhaha with your coaches to get kicked off the team because you know it's going to affect your value?
Right.
So, again, either he's not very smart or he's got real problems with authority.
And Jeff, on that, because you've been on the sidelines in college football, and I'm not saying that he would have been a star player, Marcus Peters. They would know that he has the talent to go on to the NFL. And I'm not saying he would have been given a pass, but it takes a lot to get kicked off a team, doesn't it?
Especially if you got first-round talent.
To constantly pester the coaches to the point where they say, right, get off the team.
Yeah, I mean, here you go. You're Coach Peterson, Chris Peterson at Washington. You go into Washington, you know, the pressure on college football coaches to win today is just like it is in the National Football League.
It's not just development. It's about winning.
No, and anybody that thinks that college football is about developing players for the NFL has never been in college football. It is a huge business. They need that 90,000-seat stadium filled every Saturday because that's how they pay the bills.
Got to get that bowl invitation.
Those bowl invitations are worth millions of dollars to the university. Mm. So they're not going to get rid of a player, then especially just throw him off the team if he has great ability, unless the guy is just really a problem. And so there again is one I was a head scratcher. And then the Browns go and take Cameron Irving, who I like as a player, but I look at the Browns and go, Boy, we got other needs. Why are you taking a guy at a position where you already got a great player in Mac? Because really, Irving is a better center. Now, this may be one of those ones where they say, we're going to play him at guard, and then when Mac moves on, we'll slide him into center. He can play all five positions. I kind of get it, what they're thinking, but not with the 19th pick in the draft.
We'll look at how a couple of teams did, Jeff, in a few minutes, some winners and losers there. But, you know, as we look into second round, there were a couple of players that stood out to me. I thought that a couple of running backs who I will be interested to watch, especially when they come to Wembley. I thought TJ Yeldon to Jacksonville was interesting, and Amir Abdullah could be a very good back for the Detroit Lions. And I was also interested to see Tennessee grab a receiver in Dorial Green-Beckham. And I think the Jets did well getting Devin Smith as well, because he's they say he might be a one-trick pony, but, you know, again, stretch the field speed. I've seen him track the ball brilliantly, some great over-the-shoulder catches. They were a couple that stood out to me in the second round.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that you're exactly right. That's one of the reasons why I thought the Jets had a good draft, because you go take a Devin Smith, and now you can play him with Marshall and Decker, and he's a vertical threat. He's not a guy that's going to work the middle of the field, but that's what Decker's there for. So, you know, you really address a need, you know, for a playmaker on offense. I thought that was a great pick. I agree with you. The T.J. Yeldon pick I thought was lights out for Jacksonville. I thought Jacksonville had a good draft. They took the Dante Fowler, the best pass rusher, complete pass rusher in the draft, who also will play the run to play that Leo backer for him, and then they come back with T.J. Yeldon, a home run hit on the second round, because there's a guy who can stretch it for you and make big plays. He's much an upgrade over Toby Gerhardt. You know, so I think those are I like those picks a great deal. I really think those are outstanding picks, and the Green Beckham deal at Tennessee. You know, that's one strictly on talent, because there's another guy who's had numerous problems off the field. But on the field, you know, he's right up there with Amari Cooper amongst the best of the receiver class. Just got to make sure the guy can take care of his business off the field.
Jeff, I was reading around this morning, looking at a number of different, you know, again, these kind of articles where they give out grades. But I was ignoring the grades, but I was just looking generally at the teams that appear to have done well, and it'd be good to get your winners and losers. But first, these few teams that were by consensus at the top of a lot of the they've done well in the draft department. One was Seattle, actually, because you have to factor in that they've got Jimmy Graham, really. So they, you know, Jimmy Graham was a part of their draft, even though they didn't have a first round draft pick. But there was Pittsburgh, Baltimore, like you said, Jacksonville, and then I thought, well, Pittsburgh and Baltimore always draft well. You know, I've seen good stuff about the Green Bay Packers. But in a lot of the draft lists, Jeff, were the Washington Redskins and the New York Jets. Now, with the Redskins, in recent years, it's all been about, you know, free agency. That's been the knock on this team. And now here's Scott McLuhan come in, and both the Redskins and the Jets, I feel, had good drafts. I mean, what do you think on the fact that those teams seem to have been involved as well?
Well, both of the Max, McLuhan and McCagnon, I thought, you know, in their first drafts, did some good things. I'm not as big a fan of the Redskins draft as other people are, and I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the guy that they took first.
Brandon
sure.
Chef,
yeah. Now, obviously, he's first round talent, right? But I wouldn't have had him that high on the board. And the other thing that concerns me, Neil, is he's really a guard. He's not a tackle.
That's right. It's okay.
You know, he played tackle at Iowa.
Yeah.
But if he's going to play tackle in the National Football League with the great speed rushers you're going to see in that conference, then you better play him at right tackle. You don't want RG3 depending on him to protect his blind side. So I think he's a natural guard. I think he's a Pro Bowl level guard, but I don't see him as a tackle. And they took him and say he's going to be a tackle for him. So that'll be interesting to see. And you know, again, Preston Smith I thought was a good pick. You know, you go down, but where do you think that, you know, look at Washington, and you and I talk about every team all the time.
Right.
But when you talk about Washington, and I talk about Washington, where do we talk about they need to improve the most coming off of last year?
They were embarrassing in the secondary, weren't they?
Oh, ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there was missed tackles, blown assignments, poor play, poor angles, anything you want to call it. I mean, it was embarrassing.
Really, really, really bad secondary play. But as you said, can't tackle, don't take good angles, blown coverages because they don't know how to adjust the motion. Just really, really poor play in the secondary. And I didn't see them address that area. And so because they didn't address that area and there were so many corners out there, there are over 30 corners drafted in the draft, Neil.
Yeah.
And the Redskins really didn't address the secondary issue. That's why I couldn't include them amongst one of the winners in my draft.
No, they took one defensive back, a guy called Kyshawn Jarrett from Virginia Tech. Tech in the sixth round, so they didn't address the secondary. So who were the teams you liked then, Jeff? You know, if you've got a handful of teams.
I said I liked the Jets. I thought the Jets did good. I thought the Jags did good.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kinds of teams that when you look at them, they, you know, particularly the Jags. And I know there are a lot of Jags fans in the UK, so I think we're going to spend a little time talking about this.
Yes.
You know, this was the critical year, and I for Caldwell and you know, for Gus, this was a critical year for them because everybody knows they got to win now. They got to show that jump in the third year of the program, and. You know, you talked about T.J. Yeldon, who, again, is a guy that has got size, he's got speed, he can run inside out, he's a tough Alabama kid, you know. Dante Fowler, I love Dante Fowler. And the reason I like Dante Fowler over Vic Beasley, and I liked him over Ray, and I liked him way better than the kid from Kentucky, Dupree, is I see the kid make, I mean, he has 60 tackles, right? Not just sacks.
Yep.
He has 60 tackles. Mm-hmm. So he can do the things that you want that edge rusher to do. He can set the edge. He can play across the line of scrimmage. He's a great pass rusher. And he's a guy that can play in the mix in the run game. And if Michael Bennett can come off of that knee.
Yeah.
In third round, I think they or excuse
sixth
me in the
round.
Sixth. I think I think they got a third round grade in the sixth round, and that's a steal. I mean, that is a steal.
This team needed contributors, Jeff, and there could be potentially five or six starters there. You would expect, given the offensive line struggles, that AJ Can would start at guard. You'd think that James Sample is a good fit for. Gus Bradley's defense. Then they get Rashad Green, a wide receiver in the fifth round. That's good value as well.
Absolutely. And you look at what they did in the offseason.
Yeah.
Where they've gone out and they got themselves a tackle in Parnell. They've gone out and got themselves a center. Now they've gotten themselves a guard, so they've addressed a need area, which is the offensive line. They got themselves a big-time running back, which was a need area that they had. They got themselves the pass rusher that they needed. And they had the conviction in the third pick when – you know, they could have gone with the highest rated defensive player on the board, but they stuck to their guns and said, no, we want Fowler. And this is something that I think I give them an awful lot of credit for because, you know, they could have waffled at the end because they had other opportunities to take guys, and they did what I think they needed to do. And I'm really, you know, really pleased for Jacksonville, and I hope it works out for them because, I like those guys.
Yeah, Gus has got some weapons now. No more excuses. Get some wins on the board.
That's the double-edged sword. All this when you start getting players, they said, "All right, now, coach, let's see what you got.
Let's see those wins." Who else, Jeff? Any other teams that stood out?
One of the ones that I want to talk about because, you know, I'm going the other way.
Yeah.
But when you look at the Saints, I got some issues with the Saints,
okay.
And you know that's hard for me to say because I like those guys, but first of all. Andrus Peat with the first pick.
Bit of a reach at 13th overall?
Yeah, to me, it certainly is. Because he's a little bit heavy-footed. You see, even in the Pac-12, and you got to pay attention to when they play against good players.
Yes.
When he played against Leonard Williams and he played against Danny Shelton, you saw the fact that he does play too high. He's inconsistent at times. He's a big kid, was very smart. And got but again, his feet aren't going to get particularly better. And that was the thing that I didn't like about him per se. And the fact that he does play too high. And then, you know, and I'm always about the Hawaiian kids, right?
Yeah.
But when they took, Kikaha in the first, with the second pick I just too many injuries. 19 sacks, you'd love the production, but too many injuries and the linebacker that they took in the first round, again, big, strong inside guy.
Yeah.
But I just felt there were better players available. Now, I'm sure what Rob thought was they got to tackle better against the run.
Yeah.
And so that they better start inside with linebacker. And that's a big guy that can do it. I just want to see him do it on the field. Love the Seahawks because you got Jimmy Graham as your first-round pick.
Yeah, you've got to count that, haven't you, Jeff? You have to count that.
Yeah, you have to count him because that's the way the draft works. So if you just went out and said you're going to get the best pass-catching tight end in football in the first round, would you be happy with your first-round pick? I'd be happy with the first-round pick. So I like that. And, I think that, Frank Clark you know, I just think that they draft for what they do and what they need and what fits their football team as good as anybody, you know, in the league.
They got Tyler Lockett as well, Jeff, in the third round. That's pretty good value there as well, isn't it? I mean, then we know that they need another wide receiver. I don't think they were done at receiver just because they found Chris Matthews in the Super Bowl.
No, and again, you know, and then down in the lower end of the draft, they took, you know, two offensive linemen, Poole and Glowinski, that are both going to come in and challenge to help make that offensive line better. Mm-hmm. And that's again an area where they need to work. So, you know, I thought that, you know, as you look around, obviously everybody feels good about their draft right now,
yeah.
But it's you know, where are they going to be 12 months from now? Where are they going to be 2 years from now? Because it's so fluid, and I think the fans need to understand that. Say, for example, you're San Francisco, and last year you take Chris Borland, and I think it was the third round,
yep.
And he comes out and plays lights out, and you think, wow, what a draft. We got that kid in the third round. Then he retires on you at the end of one season.
Yeah.
And now you look at it and go, we had a one-season player in the third round pick. That's not a very good pick.
No, you could be critical of the team and say, did you not find out that his heart wasn't in it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's so fluid, and there's guys that are going to get hurt and never, you know, play at the level that they were projected to play, and some guys will get disinterested, and other guys are going to get in trouble, and so this really is difficult to really put a firm handle on this until you're 2, maybe 3 years out. The problem is, you know, sometimes you're drafting for the next guy, you know. When we talk about, is Marcus Mariota going to be able to develop fast enough to keep, you know, to keep those guys in their jobs? You know, and I'm talking, when I say those guys, I'm talking about the coaches, the scouts, the GM, all of those people in Tennessee, because in the National Football League today, just like in college football, you're now not talking about 5-year cycles anymore. You're talking about 2-year cycles. And, you know, Mark Trestman found that out. Really pretty good success his first year at Chicago. Falls apart on him the second year. He doesn't get a third chance. You know, it's you know, we're moving on. And that's the reality of this. So if a guy like Mariota doesn't come in and make an impact and transition into being an NFL quarterback from a, you know, a spread quarterback at Oregon, then he'll be the next guy's issue, the next guy's quarterback.
Jeff, before we move on to the mailbag, this whole draft started with those two quarterbacks, picks number 1 and 2, Jameis Winston to the Buccaneers and Mariota, as you say, to the Tennessee Titans. And both come with question marks for different reasons, because Mariota, as you say, has got to transition into an NFL-style offense, although I did read some stuff where the Titans are going to say they're going to try and gear their attack towards him. And Winston's already going to have to prove that he's the mature face of the franchise leader. He's already been told off for putting a picture on social media surrounded by crab legs. So, you know, there's questions with both those guys right at the very top, which kind of sums up this draft. You're always going to have questions.
Yeah, there are always going to be issues. And, you know, again, it's just your question. It's about a guy's decision-making, not just his decision-making on whether to throw it to the deep route or the short route or, you know, change the play on the line of scrimmage. It's the decision-making as you go forth into your life. And you represent way more now than you did at Florida State. You represent the Glazers. You represent the city of Tampa. You represent, you know, the Tampa Bay franchise. And, you know, when a guy doesn't get that, you know, especially after all he went through during the pre-draft, you know, lead up to the draft, you know, so you really shake your head. Now, where I give Jameis the best opportunity, he's going to have better players around him in total than Mariota does. So he's going to have that advantage. What I worry about with Jameis is he doesn't escape the rush very well. He's not a guy that's going to run away from pressure. And they're going to, you know, they get hit a lot in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
So his ability to, you know, stand up to the pounding that he's going to take and the frustration that he's going to feel at all of a sudden he's not at Florida State anymore, where you've got more players drafted in the national. Here's the thing about people got to understand this too. Florida State in the last 2 years has had more NFL draft choices than any team in any 2-year history.
Right.
I'm talking about Miami, USC, Notre Dame. It doesn't matter. He has played with great players. He's played played on teams with far better talent than the team they're playing against. Now the table's been turned. Now the script has been flipped. And most of the time, when he's the quarterback in Tampa, at least right now, he's going to be playing on a team that's not as good as the team that he has. And so we'll see. You know, that'll be an adjustment for him. We'll see how he handles that adjustment.
Tom Marshall asks us in the mailbag, Jeff. He says, week one, it's Tampa versus Tennessee. The NFL schedule makers got it absolutely bang on ahead of the draft. Who is under more pressure to perform well, Winston or Mariota?
I think both of them. Yeah. I don't think there's a degree. Obviously, I think always, you know, the first guy picked in the draft is going to have, you know, a little bit more scrutiny on him, more expectation on him. But the reality of it is, Mariota is like 1B. So you've got two of the NFL's hopes for the future. And I talk about the hopes for the future in terms of, hey, these are guys that can be the Peyton Mannings and Tom Brady's of the future. And so there's going to be an awful lot of attention paid to a game that probably before the draft, when the schedule came out, everybody looked at that one as a yawning festival. Now it's going to be, it's going to be an exciting game.
What's the process then, Jeff? Because these rookies will be coming into camp this week. Rookie mini camps will take place. I know that teams, I was reading stuff about how Mariota and Winston were tested by the Bucks in terms of a day one install, in terms of these are the 15 plays we're going to put in. So there's some X's and O's to this, but will there be anything where they're sat down and talked to about being a professional, or is it not that structured at this stage? What will be the process for these young players now?
Well, for those two guys that you mentioned there, particularly, they're going to be some media education that's going to go along with this, because they're going to talk to them about how they present themselves, what they say when they address the media, because they're going to have the press is going to be on them from the day they show up at the complex.
Yeah,
this is an interesting time, because now teams this week have gone out and they've signed what you call UFAs, or street free agents, kids that weren't drafted, guys that are available. They'll bring a bunch of them. Buffalo just signed 13 yesterday.
Yep.
The Giants are bringing, I think it's 10 Canadian kids to their mini camp this weekend. Some of those guys will be signed to free agent contracts. Some will just be there to work out. But they'll all be through the same process. There'll be football. Obviously, they're going to put in plays, put in defenses, put in special team structures, all that, to give the coaches a chance to see how they learn, how they adjust to life as a pro. Mm. This is their first indoctrination into the meeting schedule that pros have, to the weight room that there's requirements that they're going to have, how you handle yourself in the training room, how you handle yourself in the media, all of these kinds of things. This is their first little glimpse at that.
Mm.
And that's the start of their NFL odyssey, for an awful lot of these guys. It's an exciting time. I listened to the Buffalo guys yesterday talking about it. And for their scouts and personnel people, yesterday was a day for them to decompress, get away from things, take a deep breath. But then later in the week, they'll have all those unrestricted free agents in for physicals, get them ready to go, and they'll be on the field Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Jeff, it's an exciting time, but is it a nerve-wracking time for coaches? Because I can picture Jameis Winston there in his red shirt saying, "Don't touch me." And around the corner comes this explosive no-name defensive end from Canada who's just beaten this no-name offensive tackle who's been signed off the street, and he wants to make a name for himself as he closes in on the franchise.
Yeah, and sometimes the first thing they'll say after he gets too close to the quarterback is they'll go A or W, and the kid will look at him like, you don't know what he's talking about, and they'll go, "Do you want an aisle or a window seat on your plane out of here? Because if you get close to him again, you're gone."
Know your place.
exactly. And that's part of the process. That's part of the indoctrination prospect. Because we just had our mini camp 2 weeks ago, and one of the things that you try to consistently drill home in these kids, because they're, like you said, Neil, they're wide-eyed and they're excited, and this is their opportunity to be pro football players. But you got to teach them from day one, hey, man, we practice like pros here. You stay off the ground. You help each other get better. It's highly competitive, but it's like fighter pilot training. I mean, those guys don't go up in, $15 million airplanes and shoot each other down for practice, right?
Right.
I mean, you got to go to that moment of truth and then pull off.
There's going to be lots of advice given to these rookies. I always go back to what Jared Allen told me, that he tells the rookies every year, and it's like, let your play scream and speak volumes on the field. you know, don't come in running your mouth. I mean, is that the easiest way to upset veterans on a team if you come in bold and brash? But some of these guys were big men on campus, Jeff, and now they're going to come in and be new kids on the block.
Well, you know what? It's interesting. That's a really good observation, because what happens to these kids, most of them have been the big man on campus for a long, long time. They just didn't blossom into players. You know, for every J.J. Watt that goes from being a walk-on to being an NFL first-rounder, that's a rare story. It's mostly these guys have been the best player on their teams since they put on a helmet for the first time. And now they're going into a completely other world, a completely different environment. And what's sad to me, and it's a reflection of our society, frankly, what's sad to me is they come in with this entitlement idea that, hey, I'm here, I was drafted, like Jared Allen said, you haven't done anything yet. Right? I mean, when you get out there and you start playing against the real guys, right? The guys that you played against now before are all going to be watching you, right? They're going to be watching on Sunday. The guys you're playing against now are grown men who do this for a living, and it is a serious business. And those rookies that come in too brash, too cocky, too loud, too much like Johnny Manziel, you know, the veterans love to see those guys get humbled, and they do their best to humble them.
They do. I saw it in firsthand at minicamp at the Minnesota Vikings a couple of years ago. Cordarrelle Patterson came in running his mouth, and there were actually a few defensive players led by Everson Griffin who were, we want to get after this guy, and they were, there wasn't that much sort of competition during minicamp that was enabling that, but they actually ended minicamp that day saying to Cordarrelle Patterson, "We'll see you in training camp." You know, it does go on.
Yeah, it is, and inside your own football team, and you want that competitiveness, and you want the veteran leadership to kind of ride herd over these guys. But you know, again, sometimes that can be very, very difficult because these kids come in with just such unreal expectations of what they're going to do in the league. I mean, for every Odell Beckham, there's 30 guys that come in and struggle, right? You know, and that's just the reality. So the advice that Jared Allen gave to, you know, shut up and let your play do your talking is great advice for these guys.
All right, let's take two more questions for the mailbag, and then we'll wrap it up, Jeff. Got a question here from Glenn Morris who says, does it show the Packers' strength in their squad if they can take a quarterback for him to learn off Aaron Rodgers for 2 years? So the Packers took Brett Hundley, quarterback from UCLA, in the fifth round. The only thing I would say on that, Jeff, is I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to be done in 2 years. I think he's got another six or seven at a high level. But I think what the Packers saw was in 2013, when Rodgers was missing for five or six games at the end of the year, the wheels kind of came off and they needed better depth. And I guess you can take a chance in the fifth round.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And you look at this, everybody talks about the two quarterbacks in the draft, but there were some guys below that who were worthy of. For example, we talked about the Jets, right? Yeah. I think the Jets taking Bryce Petty was a smart, smart move because he's a no-risk guy to you. He's played in an offense. You can see his physical ability. You can see his athletic ability. You can see his arm. He played in an offense which is a one-read offense. Well, okay, take him in the fourth round. He's got the physical ability to be a starter. He's a smart kid. If he can transition into your offense, great pick. Yeah. If he doesn't, it's kind of like a no loss here, right? Yeah. Same thing with Hundley. Hundley has big time ability. His accuracy is what is the thing that, you know, holds him back when you evaluate him. So take him, coach him, see if you can help him be more accurate, and if you can, then you get a steal in that round. And, you know, everybody's looking for quarterbacks. There's been a lot of talk about teams, for example, Buffalo. Why would you not take a quarterback in this draft in your mid round picks? But they just felt like Petty was not, you know, they didn't have a fourth round pick, and by that time he was gone. Yeah. And they may have taken him had they had a fourth round pick. You know who else I think is a big winner in this deal and a loser in this deal?
Yeah, go on.
Florida State. And we talked about the fact Florida State University had more players picked. That's a great thing now you can say to high school kids as you go out recruiting. But where they're the loser in this deal is there so many of their kids came into the draft with issues. I mean, serious character issues. And so there's There's going to be a scrutiny of that program.
Do you use that against them, Jeff, if you're recruiting against them?
Absolutely, I do. Absolutely. I'm sitting in some mom's house, and I'm going to say, okay, now, yeah, they've got a lot of guys playing in the National Football League. How many of them graduate, and how many of them, you know, have police records when they come out of that place? So, you know, and again, we talk about that. See, Buffalo, right here now in Buffalo, they're getting blasted because Rex is down at Lyle Collins' house. They take a kid with their first pick in the draft, a corner who's Darby, who's got great ability, but was present when Jameis allegedly sexually assaulted the girl, was in the room, and refused to testify against him. Then they come back and take another Florida State player, Williams, the running back, who was part of a botched drug deal and has had a girl circulate pictures of bruises that she claims he put on her. So, gosh almighty, come on now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Nice. So, that's the scrutiny that comes with success.
Yeah.
When you bring, you know, when you have great players, they're going to get scrutinized, and they better be able to hold up under the light of scrutiny.
All right. Just on those quarterbacks that we mentioned there as well, Garrett Grayson went to the Saints in the third round, didn't he, Jeff? Could be a replacement
for
Drew Brees.
Good pick. See, that's where they're being proactive. You look at those, and this is really interesting because you look at that. The Packers proactive, you know, kind of looking for insurance for Aaron Rodgers.
Mm.
The Saints proactive, looking for the next guy after, you know, Brees decides he's had enough. The Jets, on the other hand, who don't have a quarterback, and I would bet Fitzpatrick is going to be their starter, they're saying, let's take a shot, and if it hits, boy, we've had a phenomenal draft. And if it doesn't hit, we still had a great draft because of the receiver we got, because of the defensive lineman we got, because of all the other players we got. So I thought all three organizations deserve credit for taking those quarterbacks, you know, right where they need to be taken.
One last question from Paul McNiven, who says, why would the Raiders let James Jones go? He was a veteran influence needed for a young receiving core. I think, Jeff, this is one of those business parts of the deal again. You know, the Raiders get Amari Cooper. They've already got Michael Crabtree coming in. Rod Streeter comes back. James Jones averaged 9.1 yards per catch last year. He was due to be paid $3.4 million this coming season. And actually, in one of those rare cases, there's actually no dead money if they released him. So he's gone.
Business.
Yeah.
Exactly right. It's about the business. It's about the, you know, the cap. It's about the, you know, you got it. You can't keep them all, and you want to. Here's a guy that if you move him, who's at the end of his career, there's no dead money trapped, and so he makes perfect sense. It's tough. It's the hard part of the business, but it's the business of the business.
Absolutely. All right, Jeff. We're going to get back to our state of the franchise next week. I'm not sure which teams it is, but join in. Join us, and you'll join Jeff. You'll join me, won't you?
Absolutely. I will. No matter where I am, no matter what I'm doing, you know I'll be there. As a matter of fact, next Tuesday, my man, is our draft. The CFL draft is next Tuesday, so I will be joining you from draft day in Hamilton, CFL headquarters, and it is ours a little different. Ours is a seventh-round draft pick, and it's all you know, what are classified as non-import players, and the American players we all sign as free agents off what's called a negotiation list, but we have the same deal. We have the same drama, same lead-up, same. To all of it's all the same. So we're in the midst of it right now, stacking a board today.
Excellent. There's a barefooted kicker, an old tight end from London, who's I think they've got like a 37th round grade on him. So, you know, if you just want to call me up.
Hey, you know what? I'm just going to give you just an insider tip. It's not him we're interested in. It's his progeny. There's a young pass catcher out there romping around the fields of England.
Keep an eye on him, Jeff.
Tell Georgie he's on my radar.
All right, I will. That's Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We will be back next week from the Hamilton Tiger Cats War Room. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.